start a little bit back. The gremlins in my computer somehow ate like the last 15 minutes of last week's. So we're going to start again from on page 182, 181. The Afal Pekan is the first letters on the line. Afal Pekan, it's an abbreviation Vav Aleph Ayin Pei Chaf. The Afal Pekan in English, it's the second paragraph that starts nevertheless. Okay, as opposed to the last paragraph, nevertheless. So, we're talking about the statement of the sages that the Gemara says that if a person sits and thinks the Shema, for example, they haven't done anything until they actually go and articulate the words. And that is because, and he's, that's like the body of the saying, the body of the commandment. And the kavana is like the neshama. Mm-hmm. Okay, so if a person hasn't done anything, then he doesn't have any body. But if he's done it and he hasn't had the kavana for it, okay, b'di'evit, he's fulfilled his obligation. And, okay, good, you know, so.
Better than not fulfilled.
It's better than nothing. Okay, but he says, Afal Pekan, Ein Arach V'Dimyon Klal, Bein V'Chinas Or V'Chayas HaMeir B'Guf, L'Gavi V'Chinas Or V'Chayas HaMeir B'Neshama. There is no way comparable or similar at all the light and vitality which illuminates the body compared to the light and life which illuminates the soul. Shehu Nefesh Kol Chai, which is the life of everything. That we said last week is that when the Shulah makes the statement that a mitzvah below kavana is not called a dead mitzvah, that's not what he calls it. Mm. He calls it like a body with no soul, because the body has a separate life force separate than that which is enlivening it. When a person passes away, the body is still there because there's still something that's keeping the inanimate object known as the body in existence until that life force dissipates. And we can see for sure, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand that there is a big difference between the vitality which is keeping the body in existence versus the vitality that's keeping the soul in existence. There's a big difference between a live person and a dead body. Duh. Okay, it doesn't even need to be talked about. So when you're talking about this now, when you're doing the mitzvah, so the person put on mitzvah, let's just, you know, this is a person was walking down the street, and as he's walking down the street, he happens to give a big stretch, and his arms go up over his head, and right at that minute, somebody's tefillin falls out of the window and lands on his arm and his head, okay? And he says, what is this? Okay? And he takes it off immediately. Mm. Okay? That person did the mitzvah of tefillin, if such a thing were possible, because he had them on. All you need to have this mitzvah, all the tefillin on, you just have to have them on long enough to say Shalom Aleichem Rebbe. You don't have to even say Shalom Aleichem Rebbe. You just have to have them on long enough to say Shalom Aleichem Rebbe. So here it is that the tefillin fell on him, and he did the mitzvah. Okay, did he do something? Yes, he did something. In fact, not only did he do something, but he did something more than the person who spent hours learning Pri Eitz Chaim about all the kavanas of doing the mitzvahs, of doing about the mitzvah of tefillin.
Yes.
Because he actually did it. So now we're going to have to do the flip-flop back and forth. So which is preferable? I mean, so I don't think there's anybody in this world who would say, you know, my soul is the most important thing. I think I'm just going to get rid of my body. I've never met such a person like that. You know, my body, it's too limiting for my soul. I have to take too much care of it. It's high maintenance. I'm just going to divest myself of it, and it's just going to be my soul.
It's a good idea.
No, I don't think anybody does such a thing. And we see it's the same thing with doing the mitzvahs as well. Mm-hmm. Even though the soul and the body are both the result of the creation process. The process we're talking about, Seder Histalshelus and Simtsumim, and the godliness in order to be manifest in that thing has to be very much diminuated and contained into that thing. So there's a very little bit of godliness in our body. And I got news for you. There's actually, when you're talking about bits, there's a little bit of godliness in our soul as well. Even though we have all kinds of jargon that the soul is a chelek elikam and mal mamish, it's a portion of godliness. And I've said many times, if you could draw a picture of a neshama, it would be this. It would look the same like a Hashem. But the neshama is not Hashem. If it's not Hashem, that means it's limited. And if it's limited, that means it's really, really very small compared to Hashem's true unlimitedness. Does that make sense to me? Okay, so therefore we're going to say that as a result, and we take it even one step further, most of the people alive today in this generation, and we call this generation the Achvasa de Mashiach, the heels of Mashiach, we call it Eschalta de Geula, the beginning of the redemption, whatever you like to say it, this generation is like the last generation. Most of our souls, and I can't like profess to know this because no one knows what a soul is, but most of our souls are very, very processed. The fact that we're able to function in such a physical world, which is so devoid, even more devoid than, say, 1,000 years ago or 2,000 years ago, for sure. You know, in 2,000 years ago, you had Tannaim. Okay, and a Tana was not an unusual figure. And 150 years ago, you had people were called them Gaonish Kups. These were great geniuses, brilliant minds, people who were bucking in shots. Mm-hmm. And was it last week I told you the story of the Sherchit and Dakshit? I told that story to somebody. You know what I'm talking about? Mm-mm. There used to be a rabbi who lived around the corner from here. He lives in, I think Mendy Stock bought his house, I think, if not mistaken. His name was Yaffe. I don't think he was around when you, I think he was gone already.
Probably.
As was Mrs. Yaffe, who passed away after him. His name was Yekusiel Yaffe. He was from the Polish city of Dakshit. Dakshit was, I don't know, the 6th, 7th largest city in Poland. Since I'm recording this, I should do my geography, so, you know, look this up. So someone's going to be listening to this online and they'll go to Dakshit and say, oh, no, it's not. It's the 4th largest city, or, you know, it's the 8th largest city. I don't know. It's not a shtetl.
It's a fairly large city.
I don't even know if it still exists. I heard this story actually from both parties involved with it. The principal Sheikhet in Dakshit was Yochanan Gordon. Who was when he came to America, when the Friedrich Rebbe came to America, he was the Friedrich Rebbe's Balkur and Gabbai. And I heard the story from his son.
Okay.
And I also heard, when I moved here, I heard the story from Rabbi Yaffe, who was a junior Sheikhet in Dakshit. Okay, when I heard the story from Rabbi Yaffe, I started jumping up and down. I said, I can't believe it. I heard this story secondhand. I'm hearing it firsthand. What was the deal is that Rabbi Yochanan Gordon moved to America in the 30s, so this story had to happen sometime in the early 30s, late 20s, when the Friedrich Rebbe was probably living in Riga, Latvia, and Dakshit is on, I think, the western side of Poland. So to get to go visit the Rebbe didn't happen very often, and Yochanan Gordon would go for Shavuos. And being that he would only go once a week, so he would go for a couple of weeks. First of all, it was a train ride. That this is a train ride that probably took a good couple of days. You're not talking about bullet trains going across Europe now, or anything even resembling now. These were trains that probably could run faster.
Or the ones you had to push.
Yeah. So so he would go, and he told this Rabbi Yaffe, if you have any questions, if any suffix that come out, doubts about the shechita that come up about an animal or anything like that. He said, you should go to this guy, the tailor, or this guy, the shoemaker, or this guy, the somebody else, some other profession. Mm-hmm. So Rabbi Yaffe said, what about the Rav? Mm-hmm. I have a question. You have a question? Hold on. You go to the Rav. The Rabbi Yechon and Gordon just said, ah, the Rav doesn't know Shechita. He doesn't know anything. Okay? So as it was, right after Shavuos, there was a wedding, and the family bought an ox, and they wanted it to be, you know, you're going to have a big wedding over there, and the way it worked is you bought the ox, and whatever happened after that, you were responsible. So the ox was slaughtered. If it's treif, what's the deal? They sell it for pennies to the goyim. You have to go buy another ox. It's a big loss.
Right, right.
So, you know, especially you're talking about like a wedding, and you're talking about... He found, so the, he went and he checked the lungs. He found a problem.
Right.
And so he went to these three individuals. Mm. The way he tells it, he said, so the, I can't visualize it on tape, but he was the other one was a blacksmith. He went to the blacksmith first.
Yeah.
And the blacksmith, he stopped working what he was doing, and he heard the question, and he put his foot on his on the anvil. And so that his knee was bent, and put his elbow on his knee, and then put his head on his fist, like the thinker position.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. And he thought for about a minute, and he said, in Bavali, it's not a problem. And then he thought for another minute, and he said, in Yerushalmi, it's also not a problem. Well, let me tell you what that, what did he just do? Because he just
Talmud.
Went through both the Jerusalem and the Babylonian Talmud in about a minute, and about a minute and a half. Okay, that's about 3,000 pages.
Plus or minus.
Yes. Okay, with the commentaries.
Yeah.
Okay. He just
and then
he did this the same thing. He went to this the shoemaker. Mm-hmm. The shoemaker is like he stopped. He put down the hammer and he started listening. And so he also, he did one of these numbers, he put his finger on his nose and he started thinking and he said, in Bavli, it's no problem, and Yerushalmi, it's also no problem. Okay, there were three guys in this town, okay, who were not the Rav. They were simple workers. And they knew the entire Talmud clear.
Clear.
And this, the way Rabbi Yaffe told it, is that this wasn't an unusual occurrence. Every city had its people who were like this. And then the Rav, what was what made the Rav the Rav? You know, people, what kind of guy have we, you know, if I'm going to go, if I'm such a blacksmith, what kind of rabbi am I going to go to? Right. So the rabbi, even though Rabbi Yochanan Gordon says he doesn't know Shechita, which is okay, I can understand. You know, there's the joke that the little city gets a new rabbi, and the first day the lady comes in with a chicken, and she says, there's a problem over here. So he looks at it and he says, if this is the pupik, it's okay. Because, you know, he learned about it in the book, but he never saw a puppy. He never saw a chicken gizzard in his life. You know,
he only
knows about books.
Yeah.
You know, so this is, so as far as book learnings and giving drushes and these type of things.
Yeah.
So the rabbis were very good for that.
Yeah.
Okay, but just to have a normal, everyday person who went to work in the morning and schlepped his kishkas out to make a living.
Yeah.
So this was a common occurrence. And then when you hear something, I have a friend who lives in who's a shliach out in the boondocks. His father was raised in Crown Heights. His father was a mail sorter, which they don't even have those anymore.
No, right.
And he worked Saturday night to Thursday night. That's 6 days. And each night, when he was sorting the mail, he would go through an entire Seder of Mishnayos, so that he finished the entire Mishnayos in the course of a week. Okay, this guy's a mail sorter. Okay, so, you know, there... and we look and we say, this is like an incredible thing. But it used to be a common thing. Okay, our generation that we are so impressed with such a thing that somebody could do such a thing.
What are we?
Okay, so that indicates is why are we so impressed with such a thing? Because you know, I think this guy's just a simple mail sorter. He was, you know, you meet the person, and I met the man many times. I ate in his house a zillion times. He lived a block away from 770, so whenever the Rebbe was for bringing, I'd go over there and make Kiddush and come back real quick because I could get back and forth really fast. So I sat at the guy at the person's table. He was just a simple Jew. I mean, he's a regular, everyday, not, you know, somebody to rub elbows with, you know. And for Bringen, he got pushed around just like everybody else by for Bringen. So, but our souls are so processed that the thought of knowing the entire Mishnayos, if someone's going to say, you know what, I'm going to do it, I'm going to learn the entire Mishnayos by heart. People would go, ooh, great person, you know. So, 2,000 years ago, kids were doing it.
Right.
You know, so that, what does that mean? It means our souls are processed. Our souls have gone through the processing so much. Just like you might say, compared to the souls of 2,000 years ago, our souls are like inanimate objects compared to Rabbi Yehuda. Yeah.
Is it possible there's any new Neshomas in the world?
I'm sure there are. I'm not going to say, you know, or lofty souls, you know, so.
Well, lofty souls, yeah. But they could be old.
They could be old. I mean, who's to say? You know, when it says in chapter 32, when it talks about the need to feel a love for every Jew, because you don't know what kind of level soul a person has. So I learned with a guy. He goes to the oil every year. I know, a couple times a year, two times a year. And he tells me he can't stay in the oil for more than 2 or 3 minutes. Hmm. Because he says it just totally, he feels like he's going under a spiritual MRI when he's in there. So I said, I go into the oil, I could stand there for an hour. I'm not, you know. You know, I'd say the whole minor lashana, you know, it takes about 45 minutes to say it, to go through the book. I don't feel anything like that. The fact that he does, indication that he's got a more sensitive soul than I have.
Right.
Okay, but for the most part, Our souls in this generation are considered inanimate objects compared to, say, like a Rabbi Yehuda, a Rabbi Akiva, for sure, like a Moses. Not even, doesn't even want to be said how much processing our souls go through. That's what he says. It's the soul itself is also a hester lepanim. There's also a concealment, velavushim shavim, and they, as far as the way they're enclosed, they're equal. Shahar mistater misalam mislabish bay. That the soul, the light of that it conceals itself and hides itself and encloses itself, three different words over there, indicating like the words that generally in Tanya, there's a rule that if you have three words in consecutive sequence that deal with some sort of something being hidden, it's usually referenced to Bria, Yetzira, and Asiya, to the worlds of creation, formation, and action, because one is more than the other.
Right.
That the word Hester, where is the three? Hester is less concealment. No, where is it? Yeah, Hester is less than Helam, and Helam is less than Mislabish.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, a garment is a clothing. Okay, your body is totally enveloped in the clothes. To conceal it, to hide. Conceal and hide are very much synonymous. They don't do anything for us, and as far as the Hebrew goes. Okay. Hella means that you can't, that Hella means that I am hidden. Hester means you can't see me.
Mm-hmm.
Hester might mean I'm not necessarily concealed, it's just that you can't see me.
Mm-hmm.
I've got some stealth thing going on over there. Just less than.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I talked about this last week, but it didn't make it onto the tape, about this idea of Hellamos.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say this because this is such a wonderful insight that I heard from the Rebbe. There's an expression that says, "Bishvili nivra ha'olam." Remember we were talking about this last week? Yeah. Mm-hmm. For my sake, the world was created. Were you here last week?
Yeah.
No. Yeah. For my sake, the world was created. I'll say mm-hmm. for the benefit of Mrs.
Mm-hmm.
This is, seems like a very arrogant statement. For my sake, the world was created. But it's a Maimer Chazal, it's an absolute, and it's 100% true. So what does it mean? So it says that there was a Bachar who went into the Lubavitcher Rebbe and asked him, please, could he explain, what does this expression mean?
Mm.
So the Rebbe said the word Olam, world, for my sake the world was created. The word world means concealment. And indeed, there are four worlds. And how do you know which world you're in? Is determined by how much concealment there is.
Mm.
So I once asked the question, how come we can't have a revelation of Atzilus in this physical world? And the answer is, because then this would be Atzilus.
Right.
Because that's the definition. If you can see the revelations of Atzilus, you're not in this world anymore, you're now in Atzilus. As the case with, for example, the Mezuchah Magid, on his deathbed said, I'm going to die in an hour, because when I look up at this ceiling, I don't see the ceiling. I see the combination of letters of God's name, which are enlivening the ceiling, mm-hmm. which means I'm no longer in this world. And he did pass away in that hour. So as he said, so the word, we translate it now, Bishvili, for my sake, Nivra Ha'olam, Nivra Ha'helam, for my sake, was the concealment created. That there's all kinds of things going on in the world. We don't see why it is that Hashem is doing them. And we wind up in various different places. Like the Gemara says, Echad le Barbaria v'Echad le Britannia. This person gets thrown to the Barbary Coast, and this guy gets thrown to England. And why does this one get thrown over there, and this one gets thrown over here? You'll never know. But we know that when it's when your time in this place is finished, so what does Hashem do? He takes you, puts you in someplace else. Okay, whatever it is that you want to do specifically, forget about it.
I told
the story. The story next week, last week, you know, which I didn't get. Just didn't get on the tape is that the thanks to the Susquehanna River a little storm named Irene, as much as I wanted to be in Detroit 2 weeks ago, I happened to be in Philadelphia.
Right.
As much time it would have taken me to drive from Philadelphia to Toledo, driving as far as I could and turning back, in order so that Hashem could make sure that I spent last Shabbos in Philadelphia.
Right.
Okay. And it just so happened that the entire Susquehanna River flooded. Now, am I going to say that the Susquehanna River flooded and washed out highways 76 and 80 so that I couldn't pass through? I would be indeed a bit presumptuous on my part when looking at all the trucks on the side of the road that were sitting there idling waiting for the road to open up for 2 days. Okay, I don't think that the Almighty put all those people to inconvenience so that just so I could spend Shabbos in Philadelphia. But now that there is this helem that I want to do something and I can't do it because the Almighty has decided I have to do something else, so I have to do something now in Philadelphia. And wherever a person finds themselves, there's a reason for it. Excuse me. So you make the best of it. And so it continues my line of I've never had a Shabbos I haven't enjoyed continues, even with the one where I was in Philadelphia.
Even in Philadelphia.
Yes, even in Philadelphia. Even. There's a famous story with the Rebbetzin. There's not that many stories that we know about the Rebbetzin and the Rebbe's wife.
Mm-hmm.
And she used to go drive, when she was older, she used to have someone drive her to the, what was the part of, there's a beach area right off the belt. I can't remember what beach it was. I want to say Brighton Beach, but it's further south of Brighton Beach. I don't remember the area she used to go to. But anyway, so there was a construction, so they got detoured.
Mm.
And so they're sitting in traffic through the city streets, and she hears somebody yelling in Russian, a lady yelling in Russian. So she asks the driver, pull over and find out what's happening, and it turns out that there's a lady who's being evicted from her apartment. Says, how much is do they want? Says, the marshal wants a check for $4,000. Okay, so she took out her checkbook and she wrote out a check for $4,000, and gave it to him, and they lived happily ever after. So on the riding, this driver is thinking, what is that all about? So the Rebbetzin said that my father, meaning the previous Rebbe, said that if you ever find yourself in a place that you weren't planning on being, look out for something that you must do there, because that's why you're there.
Right.
Okay, so not to say necessarily was it that. The whole reason why there was construction on the BQE or the Belt Parkway was in order so that the Rebbetzin should pay this lady's rent. But since this lady's rent needed to be paid and the Rebbetzin happened to be there, and the hellum of the world, the concealment, that the way the creation was being created right then, put her in that situation. So this is your opportunity to go do something. And a person should always be looking wherever they find themselves to go look to see whatever good thing they could possibly do. So it says, Kishneihem, both the body and the soul, Heim Ma'olam Hazeh. They're both in this world. Okay, as much as we say that your soul, for the most part, is not in this world. It's not, most of your soul is not in your body. It's out. The part of the body, the part of the soul that the Alter Rebbe never talks about in Tanya, the Chaya and Yechida, okay, it's not enclosed in your body. But Chaya is in reasonable proximity to your body. It says that we talked about it's this like, before, like, the Dalet Amos of a person.
Isn't it almost like right on top, so to speak?
Yeah, it's called Makav HaKarav. Karav. It says Dalet Amos, Dalet Amos Kaina. Okay, if you're walking in the street and you see something on the ground and you're just about to pick it up, and before you can pick it up, somebody slides into home plate right underneath your hand and puts his hand on it before you do, and you pick the guy up and you schlep him to Basin, who gets it? You do, because it was in your Dalet Amos first, before that person's. Because your soul extends out around your body 6 feet. And then there's the plug-in, which doesn't really have much to do with that. We don't usually even feel its presence. But as far as the thought, speech, and action, which are the nefesh, ruach, and neshama, which comes into the body, in order for us to be able to think that we're thinking in the terms that we're able, the terminology that we're using and able to think, so our soul has to be processed to be able to relate to such words
right.
and terminology.
Right.
That's what he says. The soul also is in the olam hazeh. Shebeklalusa mistater b'shava ha'or v'hachayah shemaruach piv yizbar v'v'hinus hester panim v'yiridus ha'madregas v'stalshol sa'olus v'madrega l'madrega v'tzumsumim rabim v'atzumim. So still one long sentence. That generally you have this descent. What's happening is this godliness is concealing itself as it goes through this descent from one level to the next level through this whole creation process, through many various and awesome contractions. Ad shenith labish beklipas noga, until the godliness can enclose itself in the highest realm of klipa, which is the top of the bottom, you might say. He said way back when, klipas noga is the intermediary. It's the sentry point for godliness to come into the realm of evil. And lahachli is klaus olam hazeh achumri. That means to say, and then through this godliness coming through, it's now able to bring into this world, into life, into this coarse physical world. Dahayu called dvarim hamutarim hataharim shebaolam hazeh. And what is klipas noga? Klipas noga is manifest as all the things which are considered kosher. All the physical things in this world that you can use are under the dominion of klipas noga. And like we said back in chapters 7, 8, and etc. And our job is to find the godliness in that realm of kosher and elevate it to the realm of holiness, and hopefully not cause it to descend into the realm of unholiness. As he says, because then from there, as in this descent process, the godliness goes from klipas noga, which is elevatable, and from there, menava al yada mushpoim dvorim hatameim, and from it comes now into existence all unkosher things. Ki hu b'chinas mamutza kenal, because klipas noga is an intermediary between holiness and unholiness. It's the realm, he says, you have holy, you have profane, and in between the holy and the profane is something we call mundane. And the mundane is those things which are enlivened in the realms of klipas noga. They're really nothing until we do something to them. If we utilize them for a holy purpose, they get elevated to holiness. And if we use them for some sort of bodily pleasure, as he talks about in chapters 6, 7, and 8, so then we cause the vitality to descend into the realm of klipa. V'afal pikan, we're on the bottom line. V'afal pikan ha'orah shehi hamshachas hachayas asher Hashem meyer or mechayet derech levush zeh ein eshava b'kulam v'chinas tzimtzum v'hispashtus. But nonetheless, even though, okay, it took a creation process to make a body, it took a creation process to make a soul. And it's like a creation process to make everything else. But we could see very simply there's a big difference between a rock and a human being. They're both as a result of the creation process. I hope so, anyway.
Yeah, you don't
we know which rocks we're talking about either. You know, so.
Exactly.
Like it says in Hayom Yom, when you're walking on the road and you're not talking words of Torah, so the rock screams out, Moloch, what makes you better than me that you get to walk on top
stepping
of me?
Stepping on me, right, exactly.
So anyway, so we're not talking about those types of rocks.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, so.
I see.
So it says it's not the same. Ze'ena shava bekulin bebechinas tzimtzum v'hispashtus ki gufa gashmi hadomim mamish ka'avanim va'afa va'ha'ara hu bebechinas tzimtzum gadol. Because we see, for example, in rocks and water and dirt and that kind of stuff, the godliness is very contained.
Right.
Is there godliness? Do we believe that everything has an neshama? Yeah, and he talks about this at great length in Shaar Yechid V'Amunah. So everything has an neshama to it. That's how it's staying alive. That's how it's staying in existence in this world. Asher ein kamayu v'chayas shubay mo'etis kol kach ad she'ein bo afilu koyach atzameach. That the time the godliness comes into a rock, it is so contained and so diminutive that it, rocks don't even grow. And for plants you can see they grow. So there's more revealed godliness in a plant simply because of the fact that we can see the plants are alive. We see the difference between a live plant, a dead plant, a little plant, a big plant. Okay, so there's more revealed godliness. The godliness is not so processed. V'derech klal nachlika la'arba madregis daimim tzemeach chai umadaber k'neged gedalet oisiyas shem havaya baruch hu. And generally speaking, there are four kingdoms of inanimate plant, animal, and human, corresponding, to the four letters of Yud Kei Vav Kei. And there is a general rule that if there's something that you have four of, they'll correspond to Yud Kei Vav Kei. That's why there's four of them.
Do we know what
how's it go?
Corresponds to what?
Sure, from bottom to top. The inanimate kingdom corresponds to the lower hay, because it is an expression of Malchus, which is a final result, which you can't get any lower than that, and that's in a rock. And the Vav is going to correspond to Tzomech, because a Vav is like a straight thing that's straight up, like a tree, like a plant. A animal is like the hay, because the hay is the idea of moving around back and forth. That's the idea of an animal. And the person is the Yud, because the main thing of the person is the intellect. And not saying that people have pea brains per se like a Yud, but intellect is initially a flash, and hence corresponds to the Yud. Yes.
Shemamenu mishpoim, k'may she'ein arach dimyin ha'ara hamshachas l'chayas shebid daimim v'tzameach, l'chayas hamshachas l'chayas hamalubash b'vuchinus ha'medaber, l'chayim ha'medaber, is another one of those long sentences. And just like you can't compare the soul of a plant and an animal, a plant and a rock, to a human being and an animal, and he breaks it up into that category. He doesn't say you can't compare the soul of a rock to a plant, and the soul of a plant to an animal, and the soul of an animal to a human being. He breaks it up two and two. Why? Because if you're comparing the four categories, these four kingdoms, to Yud Kei Vav Kei, so Yud Kei is always put together, and Vav Kei is always put together. Okay, because Vav Kei is in the portion of Nitzavim. Hanistareis la'Hashem Elokeinu v'haniglas lano laveseinu. The hidden things are for Hashem.
Yeah.
That's the Yud and the He.
Right.
And the revealed things is for us. That's the manifestations of godliness that come down into this world. That's the Vav and the He. V'arav shekulam or echad shava b'vuchinus hester panim. Even though what's happening, the godliness is the same. It's the same godliness. It's enlivening. A person is enlivening the rock. But this is obviously in the rock. It's more processed. It's concealed and it's enclosed and in belavush achar. Echad ubekulam hu levush naiga. All of them are enclosed initially in this garment of klipas noga. Because our bodies also fit into the category of mundane. Our bodies aren't holy.
Right.
We're not going to say, we don't do the original sin stuff. That's not us. Because by us, there's no sin that's original. Somebody did it already, but first. Our bodies are mundane.
Yes.
They're not bad. They're not holy when we get them.
Right.
What do? Is we use them for good purposes. Just like everything else that comes into our possession. We use it for a good purpose. It gets elevated. So our bodies also. So the inanimate object falls into the realm of elevatable klippa, and so does everything else. ואין ערך ודמיין כלל בין הארץ המשך הזו אין צריך ברוך הוא שהוא בפנימיוס רצוני יש ברוך בלי הסתר פנם הלבוש כלל המאיר המלובשת במצוות מעשיות ממש.
However, when you have an article which you're considering holy, there you don't have any concealment. Even though it was initially made, a pair of tefillin is made out of a cowhide.
Right.
It is the same processing, very much similar to a pair of shoes.
Or a belt, right, whatever.
It's a tanning process. Tefillin have certain things that can and can't be done. You have to show respect to a pair of tefillin.
Right.
They have to be wrapped up neatly. If you put in, you should have a separate bag for your tefillin. You should put them in a safe place. You can't put them under a bed. You can't take them into the bathroom. You can't put them on the floor.
Right.
After 80 or 100 years, they're going to have to be buried in a cemetery. Okay? Because the item itself is holy. As soon as the batimacher takes that piece of cowhide and puts it into the press and gives a kvetch and says l'shem kedushas tefillin,
it's not a
cowhide anymore.
Right.
It's now imbibed with a revealed godliness that is says this item is now holy. It's not mundane anymore.
Right.
And that's the way it is with every article we're using for a mitzvah. That's why you can't throw away any of the mitzvahs. You see people, for example, that if a beard hair falls out, so they put it in a book.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not really sure if there's really a mitzvah to grow a beard, because there's a mitzvah not to shave.
Right.
So I'm not so sure if there's a mitzvah to grow a beard.
Right.
Because it just says you shouldn't shave the corners of your face.
Don't shave, right.
You know, but it says the Arizal, for example, would never run his fingers through his beard, lest he interrupt the godly flow that was coming through it.
Huh.
You know, so every physical thing is geared from holiness. So now, if that's the case, then what's going to happen when you get to the Shema? She's going to talk about that in chapter 39, 40, 41. The Shema is a physical articulation. He talks about that in 39.
Right.
Okay, so what's happening to your tongue and the other four parts of your mouth that are engaged in speaking, that these are forming the letters of these words, which are now the mitzvah.
Right.
It's also being held, becoming holy.
Right,
Okay, the only difference is that halavai, our mouths should be like a, you know, as soon as you give a kvetch and you say l'shem kedushas shema, whatever, our mouths should always be holy. But you know, it doesn't work that way. The king of mitzvahs to lose b'dibur, he says right here. So when you're talking about mitzvahs that are spoken, ubitei sosayim b'li kavana, when those mitzvahs are done without the proper intention, shehu nachshav kemaisa mamish kanal, that for them, for these mitzvahs, the moving of the lips and articulating the words is considered doing. So you have to do. You have to actually say that. Legavi haram shachos ori and say baruchu hamiram alubeshes bekavanas hamitzvahs ma'asiyos shahadam is kavin vasiyosin kedei ladavka bo yisbarach al yedei kiyum ritzayne. It's another one of these long sentences. So you compare this to the derivative of the infiniteness of Hashem, which illuminates and encloses in the kavana of doing that physical mitzvah, which the person has in mind when he's doing it. And why is he doing that? In order to be able to cleave to Hashem through the fulfilling of Hashem's ratzin, that Hashem and his will are one. So what's the kavana? A person saying Shema, and he gets the word Echad, and he's all united with God. What is that? That's an expression of Hashem's will, as we talked about before at the beginning of the parak, a conveyance of Hashem's wisdom, which Hashem and his will and his wisdom are all one. And when a person is now thinking of those kavanos, those intentions behind the saying of the Shema, for example, so now he's hooking up with the will of Hashem as it is in an unadulterated form. Because it's just like putting on a pair of tefillin. V'kame kavanas hatfilah, so it is with davening and kriya shema, ubir chasecha, the shema and his blessings, v'shar brachas, that also does with other brachas, shekavanasa behem midavach umachshav zesich lobo yizbarach. Look at an example now, it's an interesting thing to an aside. Well, I was thinking we were going to finish, but we're not anyway, so I can take a bigger aside since we're not going to finish anyway. So, You might want to say that the kavana is the bracha. You're about to light a Shabbos candle, and you say, "Asher kedushan v'mitzvah yisav v'tzivan ala hadlik ner shel Shabbos kedush." Okay, so you think that's the kavana. No. What's going on over here? Because you have to have the kavana for the bracha, too. The bracha is a separate thing. It's such that it says, brachas eina ma'akvin. If a person lit a Shabbos candle and walked away from it and realized that they didn't say the bracha, but they had in mind, they just kind of like, I don't know, did the three, and they prayed for all of their relatives, and, you know, God bless Johnny, and God bless Mommy, and God bless Daddy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And then suddenly realize, you know, I didn't say the bracha. Actually, with that, you could go back and say the bracha again. But it doesn't hold back. If a person on the first night of Pesach swallowed an entire matzah and then realized, oh, I didn't say the bracha. Did he fulfill the mitzvah of eating matzah? Yes. Because bracha is enema akvin.
It's a different issue.
The bracha is, so what's the bracha for? So you have to have there's the mitzvah. There's two things going on over here. You have the mitzvah, and the mitzvah has its kavana, its intention.
Mm.
The bracha is supposed to focus us so that we have the right intention.
Mm.
But with the bracha, you have the physical articulation of the bracha, and you have the kavana of the bracha. There's a joke that said, how come there's no bracha on giving tzedakah?
Mm.
We've heard that, we've said that one before? No?
Mm.
It says, if there be a bracha on giving tzedakah, what would be? It says, so you're walking on the road, and a guy comes up to you and says, have you got any tzedakah?
Hmm.
So you go, ooh, I have an opportunity to do a mitzvah. So what are you going to do? Oh, I didn't go to mikveh yet.
No.
So you're going to go run to mikveh. Okay? And then what's going to happen is, if you run to mikveh, so then you come back, you have to put on your gartel.
Right.
Okay? And then you're going to start with the bracha. Baruch, which is brachas, reishis u'makar kol brachas. I'm drawing down from the highest levels of radla.
Mm-hmm.
Ata, from the level which is related to beyond any name.
Uh-huh.
By this time, the poor guy dropped dead from starvation.
Exactly, yeah. He's gone. He's history.
So, we don't have a bracha for tzedakah. You should just do it. Okay? But for other brachas where it's not so crucial, then, you know, there's a bracha which I've never said in my life, and that's, you know, for them putting a fence around the roof.
Ah.
You have a flat roof, and people have access to it. You put up a fence. It's a bracha. Shirke d'shanam v'zoysa v'tzivano alasiyas maike. Okay? There's these stupid houses in Oak Park that are slanted roofs. No one goes on them, so there's no
possibility.
No possibility of fulfilling this mitzvah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the bracha is a separate thing. So what is the bracha doing? The word bracha means hamshacha, to draw it down. The word bracha is, what are you drawing down? It's all based on the pivotal word in the bracha. The word bracha is asher. It's like right in the middle.
Okay.
And you think, what's the word asher mean?
That.
What's the big deal? That. The word asher is related to the word ashrei, lucky. Is also related to the word ashirois, richness.
Mm.
Is related directly to the level of tainug, divine delight.
Yeah.
When a person is saying a bracha, what is it that they're drawing down into the mitzvah that they're about to do? Is they're drawing down divine delight, divine pleasure into the world. And that's related in the word specifically, asher, that. Who would have thunk it? You know, just a little an article of speech.
What's up with that?
Yes. What is up with that? Now you know.
Sorry.
Yes, indeed. So we came into the little Devish Warden said Borahum is Kavan Malubish Vikavana Zual Yaday, Kiam Rasina, Shuhuratsana Achad, Vikama Kavana Satvila Kriya Shma Vasikla, I should keep my finger on the place. Valai Shidvekus Amakshava Visekala Adamba Yizborahi Mitsad Asme Lamaila Mitvekas the Kiam and Mrs. Maisius Bapail Mamish Kamosha Kostov Lakaman. He's gonna explain later on that it's not that he's trying to do more than just the actual performance by what he's thinking. He got two things going on over here. You have the physical performance of the mitzvah.
Yeah.
You have the intention behind the mitzvah.
Right.
You have the bracha, which is going to draw that godliness into the performance of the mitzvah.
Mm.
And you have the kavana behind the mitzvah.
Mm-hmm.
This is what Hashem wants also.
Mm.
Hashem wants you to say the words. But Hashem also wants you to think what the words mean. And whatever other kavanas you're going to throw in there.
Right.
And it's much easier if a person, for example, doesn't understand Hebrew and they're just doing an exercising in syllabic enunciation.
Yes.
So, okay, they're doing the mitzvah, but you can see that if a person understands what's behind them, words that they're saying, there's much more feeling to it.
Mm.
That's even simple. Mm. If you say the word asher, which now up till now all you thought it meant was that, and now you understand that the word asher now means an entitlement to asherus, to richness and to pleasure and to wealth and to divine tainug of divine delight. So now the whole word asher is going to take on a whole different nuance. The higadela la in case la mila mila maaris rotsan ha'elyon ha'meir lubeshes b'kiyum. And you see then that what does it mean? That the kavanah is much greater. It's accomplishing much more. There's less concealment in the kavanah than there is in the performance of the mitzvah. Because you can perform the mitzvah, it's just a physical act, but a person can't say, I'm going through the kavanahs in a perfunctory manner.
Mm.
It doesn't. Those are mutually exclusive statements. Perfunctory. I'm going through the kavanas by rote, huh? That doesn't. That you can't do that. If you got kavana, you have kavana.
Kegadol milis or haneshama al haguf.
Like we'll get to the end of the paragraph over here. Mm-hmm. Like this. Like the advantage of the soul over the body. Kliyom alubush haneshama kemagufa mitzvah asmer shehu kliyom alubush lekavanasa. And the relationship is that just like the soul holds the body, so too also the soul holds the kavana is contained within the mitzvah.
Mm.
Okay, we'll stop here. We're on 186, the third line, the fourth line is where we stopped. Okay, to be continued.